Putting these stories out is basically an act of faith at this point that they will even reach you. Just listening to some information about the 4.9 earthquake in New York that happened today. We don't know what's coming next, but it can't be good. Here's Out of the Swells number 13, Hillview Academy for Children of Excellence, part 2. I stared into the dark doorway, the tall man having disappeared inside. "We need a couple minutes," Eric called out to him. A moment later, the door slammed shut. "Again," I said in a low voice, "what are you doing here?" "I'm trying to document what's happening so I can get appropriate help for the family." "But you're a tech guy, you're not a researcher." "It's a good question," Judith commented. "And you're sleeping in their guest room." "And with your history," I pointed out. "I thought you weren't going to mess with this stuff anymore." Eric kicked at a crack in the pavement, avoiding our eyes. "You need to go home," I said quietly. "It will follow me," he replied. "I can't do that to Noah." "What exactly do you mean?" "I had a dream about a week before I got the footage from that ghost hunter. I'd never even heard of this place before then, but I had a dream about that building with the gymnasium. I was in there shooting baskets, and these boys came out onto the court. They started teasing me, you know, old high school stuff, making fun of me for being gay. It got nasty, and they attacked me. It was incredibly vivid, but when I woke up, I figured it was just some stress-induced dream. I was achy, though, my head hurt. When I went into the bathroom and saw my reflection, I had a black eye and my nose was bleeding. There were bruises on my legs and arms."
"And you didn't think to mention this before now?" Judith demanded.
"It scared me. I didn't tell anyone. I haven't been involved in this world in a long time, except for occasionally cleaning up footage for the guy who reached out to me about this place." Eric blew out a breath in frustration. "So I had a dream, I had the dream, and a few days later, that guy, the one whose team attempted to stake out the gymnasium, called me and asked me to take a look at the footage they'd captured. He wanted to see if I could brighten it up a bit. I agreed, and when I watched the footage, I recognized the gym. It was the exact same one from my dream. I called the guy, and he caught me up on what was happening on the property, and it felt like more than a coincidence that it had been 6 teenage boys who were said to haunt the building. It had been 6 kids who beat me up in my dream."
"Yikes," I muttered. "Strange, it's not like you have any connection to this place."
Eric looked guilty. "Or do you?" "Edgar Locke was my uncle, my mom's brother."
"Stop it," I exclaimed, unable to keep in the nervous laughter. "What in the world?"
"How's that for a family secret?"
"Did you know this?" I asked Judith.
She shook her head. "This is the first time I'm hearing it."
"Hold on. That is weird. The two of you seem to be running parallel investigations here, but aren't sharing anything with each other. Why?"
"You don't understand this place yet," Judith explained. "It creeps up on you. It's sneaky."
"Okay, there you go. Right there. Neither of you are acting like yourselves."
"We should go inside," said Eric.
"Oh, they can hang on a minute," Judith snapped. "They act like we're on the payroll."
I eyed her.
"I cannot stress enough how freaking weird the two of you are being."
I turned to Eric. "But back up. You looked at the footage, realized it was from your dream, and knew it was your uncle's place?"
"No, I didn't know he was a relative until I came down here and did some research at the Historical Society. There wasn't much information about the guy online, but there was plenty in the town newspaper."
"So it was the dream that pushed you to come down here?"
"That and the thing in our yard."
I let out a noise of frustration.
"I feel like I'm pulling teeth. What thing in your yard?"
"There's someone that looks like me that we kept seeing at the property line. Noah saw him, or it, first. He was outside with Hamish and saw me back in the woods. When I didn't answer him, when he called, he walked towards where I'd been, and apparently I disappeared after walking behind a tree. He said I was there and then I was gone, and the thing that freaked him out was that Hamish didn't follow him when he went to get me. He went back to the back door and scratched to be let inside. And then
I saw the double on my way back from a run. At first, I thought it was just another guy out jogging, but then I realized that we were, like, synchronized. We were in lockstep. I stopped, and he stopped. I put my hand to my side because I had a stitch, and he did the same. It was freaky. His back was to me, and I held up a hand to wave, to test it, you know, to see if he would do the same. He did, and then he turned around to look at me. I realized we were even wearing the same clothes, an old ratty something natural t-shirt I got ages ago on Nantucket. It was impossible. It was me. He just stared, then turned and jogged off down the road. Oh, I said, dread trickling through my body. I glanced over at my car, wanting to get in and speed home. Oh, Judith parroted. Does this ring a bell with you? Maybe. Chris thought he saw me behind our house, past the fence. He was adamant it was me, but I wasn't back there. I mean, I never go back there. There's no need. You bury your medals at the fence line? Judith guessed. I nodded. Well, at least you know your protections are holding up. Kat had a little blonde demon in her bedroom, I pointed out. Because she invited it in, Judith countered. You cast it out. Hold on, it presented as a little blonde girl? You didn't tell me that, Eric said to Judith. Why? It's in that house, he said, motioning to the imposing structure beside us. I've seen her. I thought it was weird because this was an all-boys school and there's no record of Locke having his own children. Maybe it's not the same one, I suggested, hopefully. I mean, they all seem to use the same playbook. Do you really think there could be this many coincidences? Judith asked skeptically. Fine, I acknowledged. I get why you're here, I pointed to Eric. But what does this place have to do with me or you? I said, gesturing to Judith. I had a dream too, she admitted. I was in that awful chapel, walking down the center row towards the front, and I saw myself, my double, walk out from behind a curtain and step up to the pulpit. In the dream, I ran out of the church to get away from it and followed that path all the way back up here, right where we're standing. But there was a sign, over there. She gestured to the front of the house. On it was the name of the school. When I woke up, I looked the name up, did a little reading, but couldn't find any significant connections to me, and then Eric called me that afternoon. Jeez, I breathed. Have you had any weird dreams lately? She asked. No. Well, I mean, yes, and they're wicked vivid, but nothing about this place. What are you dreaming about? Eric asked. Well, I had one dream where it had been pouring for days, and I looked out our kitchen window, and a river of water had washed away parts of our fence. Power lines were down all over the street, and there was a massive tree on top of the car in the neighbor's driveway. Oh, I'm having those too, Judith said dismissively. I shrugged. Stress dreams. She shook her head. No. Glimpses. Of what? What's coming? She said, sounding a touch annoyed. You know what those things in the sinkhole told you a while back. Every sensitive I know isn't so much sleeping now as future tripping every night. What things in a sinkhole? Eric asked, wide-eyed. Text in brackets. Check out ghost story number 61. I swear to God if this means we have to move again. To hear what some sinkhole gnomes had to say about our future. End brackets. It's a long story, I offered. But I mean, who trusts a gnome, though, right? I really regret losing touch the last few years, Eric said sincerely. I chuckled. What did they say would happen, though? End time stuff, I offered vaguely. What kind of end time stuff? Lots of water. I sighed. Water, Eric said quietly. I looked at him and was about to ask what else he wasn't telling us when Judith cut in. The simplest answer is that the veil is incredibly thin right now, and whatever's been set into motion is accelerating. It's either the actual end or the last hurrah for these demons. Darkest before the dawn keeps pinging through my mind on repeat. Right, I said absently. So you agree? Well, yeah, I mean, something's coming, right? It's been coming. It's here. It's like energizing this stuff. I don't know, but yeah, I agree. The darkness has only begun. You guys are freaking me out, Eric muttered. You're saying everything's going to get worse? Yep, we said in unison. Much worse, added Judith. I don't know, Eric pushed back. Things might turn around. I pursed my lips, not wanting to push too hard. It wasn't fair to spread doom and gloom. It wasn't fair to tell him that I'd stopped prepping. Aside from a week or so's worth of food, the hand crank radio, and some extra water, I didn't see a point anymore. Every generation has its end-time fear. The difference now was climate change. Judith may be hearing darkest before the dawn. All I hear is water. It wakes me up at night. A slow drip. A roaring tide. Devastation. Destruction. Despair. What are you thinking about? Eric asked. You look scary. Nothing, I replied, shaking my head. Should we go in and get this over with? They're not going to listen and they won't leave, he replied. So what's our objective? Asked Judith. If they don't want help, that's on them, I argued. I'm more concerned with the two of you. I think you're both under more than a touch of oppression. What if we just left now? I'll call Biddy and she'll get in touch with Father McGonagall. Judith and Eric exchanged a look. It's probably not a bad idea, Eric admitted. We have to give it one more shot, argued Judith. This family needs help. Fine, I sighed. Let's get this over with. Guards up, Judith said as we climbed the steps. But I was so looking forward to meeting Eric's psychotic uncle, I replied dryly. Oh, he's in the chapel, Eric said without missing a beat. Judith knocked at the door, and we waited a surprising amount of time before it opened. A little boy stood there staring up at us. Hello, Crane, Judith said. May we come in? Who's that? The boy asked, staring daggers at me. I'm Mrs. Sauer, I replied, disliking the child immediately. Have you seen them too? He asked. I shook my head. Who? The ones who made him sick. Eric made a noise of disbelief. Judith cut in. May we please come in? She stepped around the boy without waiting for him to answer. Eric and I followed. The kid slammed the door harder than necessary, then scurried up the stairs to the second floor. Judith continued down the central hallway, leading us to a dark kitchen at the back of the house. The tall man who'd come outside earlier sat at a kitchen table, a mess of papers and books scattered before him. Well, what did you think? He asked, directing the question towards me. The property's beautiful. Hunter, this is Liz, Judith interrupted. She was able to confirm the accounts of ritual sacrifice in the chapel. Additionally, she may have information about the location of the two missing boys. We'll reach out to the local police to pass on the information she gathered. Are they here, on the property? A woman asked, making me jump. She'd appeared in the doorway to the adjoining dining room. She wore her extremely long, dirty blonde hair, half up. Her deep-set, ice-blue eyes were bloodshot. She looked gaunt, fragile. No, I said reassuringly. They aren't here, but I believe they're on a nearby property. In the pond, right? Said a small voice. A boy, about 9 or 10 years old, peeked out from behind his mother. That's right, I said, trying to keep the fear out of my voice. In our pond? Hunter demanded, standing. No, I began. What do you know about the boys? The woman asked, turning to her son. Nothing, he said quickly, running off. Baron, she yelled after him. Amelia, Hunter said, his voice stern, let him go. We all stood there, unsure, the quiet stretching out. Finally, unable to stand it any longer, I said, yeah, so you all should move. Hunter crossed his arms defensively and shook his head. His wife said, that's not possible. Anything's possible, I replied, trying to keep my tone light. Financially, we can't make a move right now, growled Hunter. Regardless, we're committed to the renovation of this property. Just the house, I asked, or are you messing with the campus buildings as well? We plan to address all the buildings on the property, Amelia replied. We believe once the campus is restored, we can either rent or sell it to a private school and get more children killed, Judith cut in. We would never do anything to put children in harm, Hunter argued. You have your kids living here right now, I pointed out without thinking, then apologized. I think it's best if you all wrap things up and go, Amelia said, her voice shaking. We appreciate your help, Eric. I understand your interest because of the family connection, but I don't know what else you're hoping to accomplish here.
Amelia's right, her husband added. If you can't offer any suggestions other than to simply pick up and leave everything we've put into this place behind, then I think we're done here.
A creaking pulled my attention, and I looked over at a large wooden door. The basement, Amelia supplied, staring at the door. Our oldest, Bree,'s been down there all morning woodworking. She offered a tight smile.
The door opened slowly, and an 11-year-old girl stepped up into the kitchen, gently closing the door behind her and sliding a chain lock in place before turning to look at us.
Sorry, she said, apparently apologizing for interrupting the adults.
No problem, honey, her mother offered, obviously anxious.
The girl glanced around the room, staring at me for too long a moment, so I introduced myself. She just smiled and left the kitchen without another word. Hunter and Amelia exchanged a glance, and I went ahead and dropped the guards I'd put back in place before I'd entered the house. The energy was absolutely dreadful, tense and thick, oppressive, enough to squeeze your throat to keep you from speaking. Judith began to explain to the couple what we'd discussed as we walked the property, but I turned my attention to the house. I watched as the basement door opened, despite the chain lock, though no one else seemed to notice it. A short man with severely sideswept, stiff hair stepped into the kitchen. He wiped his hands on his dark slacks. As he closed the door behind him, I noticed that his leather shoes tracked something dark onto the kitchen floor. He moved across the kitchen to a door at the back of the house and stepped out onto a narrow, enclosed porch. I followed. He stood, surveying the backyard, that strip of woods that stood between his property and the school campus. I heard low voices and rustling coming from the woods and continued to follow him as he strode across the yard. Stepping over a low stone wall, he continued on a path for a few steps, disappearing around a tight bunch of pine trees. It occurred to me, for the first time since stepping outside, that it had become nighttime. I wanted to go back out of the woods, but felt compelled to follow. I regretted it the second he came back into view. Six boys stood motionless in the darkened woods. In a single-file line, they kept their heads down, as though not daring to make eye contact with the man. I didn't notice the figures on the ground until Edgar Locke kicked at each one in turn. "You've done well," he said, in a low, dangerous voice. The boys remained silent. "Did anyone see you?" The boy at the head of the line offered a quiet, "No, sir." The bright moon reflected brightly on the pond visible through the trees behind them. "Move silently, quickly along the tree line," Edgar ordered. "You'll carry them to the chapel, and we'll begin." Without a word, the boys split into two groups, picking up the dripping bodies off the ground, a boy to each arm, one to carry the legs. They moved efficiently, unnaturally quiet through the underbrush. Edgar watched them for a time before heading out towards the pond, where he stood, hands behind his back, as though appraising the campus. After a time, his hand moved to his hip. Pushing aside his overcoat, he pulled out a dagger. I could see it clear as day in the moonlight. He strode purposefully around the pond, behind the dormitory, obviously headed for the chapel. I stood frozen in place, unwilling to follow him to witness how the nightmare would continue to unfold. "Liz," Judith's voice called gently. I closed my eyes, rubbing at them with my hands, desperately wanting to erase what I'd just witnessed. When I looked around me again, it was daytime. Branches around me whipped in a bitter wind. The gray sky above threatened icy rain.
"I've seen things before," I said shakily, "but not like this. It's one thing to see some dead people or gnomes or talk to a fucking demon in a finished basement, but I did not sign up for this."
Judith tried to take my arm to lead me out of the woods, but I shook her off and stormed back towards the house. Eric stood in the yard, a few steps beyond the fieldstone wall, Hunter and Amelia just outside the back door.
"What is it?" Amelia called.
"Give us a minute," Judith called back, then to me. "What did you see?"
"Those boys. I saw those fucking little boys again."
I said, unable to keep my voice down, despite Judith holding her hands out as if to calm me. Eric was at my side. What happened?
They drowned those little boys in that pond. Your uncle had the older ones carry them to the chapel. I don't know. I don't know what they did to them, but they were a sacrifice. Oh my God, I said, attempting to calm myself down.
I'm never going to sleep again. I'm never going to be letting my kids out of my sight again. How can these fucking people stay here when they have children?
Shh, Judith admonished.
No, I said, anger an easier choice than the panic and fear that threatened to overtake me. Your kids are in danger. I stalked across the yard to the couple who looked frightened of me, of all things. You are idiots if you stay here. That man is still here, and he's active and powerful, not to mention the little hench teens that he's got holed up in that gym. If you don't get your kids out of here immediately, then whatever happens to them, their blood is on your hands.
It's not that simple, Amelia began. I spun around, unwilling to listen. I knew I probably looked like a raving lunatic, but I was terrified and pissed. I would never get those images out of my mind. I was angry with Eric and Judith and those two half-possessed people, but mostly I was angry with myself for letting my guard down and ignoring Judith's warning because I couldn't ignore my curiosity. As it was, I struggled, and I mean struggled, to let my kids out of my sight. School shootings, kidnappings, child trafficking, pedophiles, people driving while texting, the risk of choking or drowning, or not looking both ways and stepping off the curb at exactly the wrong moment. Though none of it had happened, thank God, I could still see it all in my mind in horrible possibility. God damn it, I muttered, stalking around the front of the house. I could hear Eric talking to Amelia and Hunter and sensed Judith following right behind me. I started the car remotely with my key.
Liz, Judith demanded, slow the fuck down.
I'm not spending another second here, I said. I can't take it. I passed a diner in town on the way. Please just meet me there, okay? It had been so long since I'd had a good old-fashioned panic attack that I didn't recognize what was happening until I was a few miles from the house. I sat in the car in the diner parking lot, breathing slowly in an attempt to calm down. I checked my phone, no messages. It was 2:45, the day had flown. The kids would all be home from school in a few minutes. I promised Chris I would be home well before dark. If I left by 4, I'd make it with time to spare. I went inside the diner.
Well, that was exciting, Judith said a few short minutes later, sliding in beside me as Eric took the booth across from us.
Are you okay? He asked.
I'm fine. Embarrassed, but a million times better now that I'm away from that hellhole, I admitted.
What did they say?
You scared the hell out of them, Judith replied.
Ugh, sorry.
Don't apologize. You may have shocked them out of whatever spell they've been under. Maybe they'll see straight and get their kids out of there.
A waitress came over to take their orders. I'd already ordered a coffee and a stack of pancakes, having missed lunch.
I feel like you guys were tiptoeing around those people, I said. Are you afraid of them?
That little one scared the hell out of me, Eric admitted.
Really, though, I said, after sipping my coffee. You both need to do a cleansing or something. You're definitely being influenced.
Maybe so, Judith agreed. So, what's the answer? Why were we all called down here?
Eric had a psychotic uncle, and you had a dream, and then you called me.
Are you forgetting that we caught Kat's name on that EVP? Judith pointed out.
Well, I mean, did you, though? What did it say? Kat's cradle will fall?
That's quite the coincidence, don't you think?
How involved are you with all this? I asked Eric. I mean, the paranormal investigations. Are you totally back at it now?
Not really. I do a little tech stuff here and there when people ask, but yeah, this is the first time in a long time I've actually gotten personally involved.
Right, well, I said, sighing. I think this is explained easily enough. Your uncle was a demon-worshipping psycho who conjured something terrible on that property. He was bound to reach out to you at some point to try and drag you in, and it worked. And then you, I looked at Judith, had a dream, and as you admit, we're all having weird dreams right now because the veil is thin, because the fucking apocalypse is on the horizon.
Who said anything about the apocalypse? Eric asked nervously.
Not me, Judith said, raising her hands defensively.
That's just a little theory I'm working through, I said.
The waitress returned with my pancakes, Eric's scrambled egg plate, and Judith's coffee. "Yum," I enthused, digging in. Eric pushed his plate aside. "Are you saying this because you've had some sort of psychic download or dream, or are you saying this because it's your opinion?" "I'm not psychic," I corrected, before taking a big bite. "But you've had prophetic dreams," he pointed out. "We all have," Judith commented. "You've had them too." He stared at her, wide-eyed. "How do you know that?" "Because I am psychic. Liz just gets pings of knowing and talks to the dead and other things." "What did you dream about?" I asked, a very bad feeling running through me. "The chapel." "And?" Judith prompted. Eric leaned forward. "A wave," he said in a low voice. "It starts on the coast, the east coast, I think. I'm pretty sure. It plays out like a flipbook of images. It's dark out, but it's a weird, dusky dark, not natural. The beach, birds flying inland, the wave, but it's not a normal wave. There are things in the water, people, dead and alive. Then water flowing through streets in a coastal town, I think maybe Maine, then New York City, and it must be after because the streets are flooded, but it's silent. And then a flash, and I'm at the edge of a cornfield. There's a beautiful, clear blue sky overhead. The temperature's perfect, and there's a nice breeze. It's the perfect day, and I feel a moment of relief. And then I hear something overhead. It's not a plane. I've never heard anything like it before. There's a huge boom. It brings me to my knees. The entire ground shakes. I open my eyes, and I'm in San Francisco, up at the top of a hill looking down. It's nighttime, and there are no lights, no power. I can hear someone screaming, and then gunshots, and then more screaming. I turn around, and there's a line of troops behind me, but as they come closer, they're in black uniforms, so I'm not sure if maybe they're police. One of them lifts their weapon. "You are in violation of curfew," he says. So I close my eyes, waiting for the end, and when I open them, I'm back on the beach. The wave is coming towards me, and it all plays out again and again and again until I wake up. We sat in silence. I'd actually lost my appetite. "Is it the same every time?" Judith asked. "It had been," Eric admitted, "until last night." "Oh, great," I said. "What changed?" "Just the very beginning. But the new part didn't repeat through like the rest of it does. It was just the first cycle, so I don't know if it means anything." "What was it?" Judith asked gently. "I was in a field, a sports field, behind a high school. It is so vivid. It feels more like a memory. So I'm with a group of people, not just high school kids. It's like a gathering, a celebration. There's a countdown happening on the football field scoreboard. There are 4 minutes and 8 seconds left when I first look at it. A woman comes by with a basket of glasses. I take a pair and she hands them out to all the people around me. And she's saying, 'Don't look at it without those glasses,' in a happy voice. And she has a southern accent. There are kids running around through the crowd with these cute headbands on, a sun bobbing on one side and a moon on the other. And I'm thinking, what a nice community this is. There's music playing, but I don't really notice until someone turns it off and said, 'Let the countdown begin.' The sky darkens slowly as we count down from 60. Everyone has their glasses on. It gets darker and darker. I should be looking up, but I'm not. I'm looking around at everyone else, and then all of a sudden I'm terrified. There are oohs and ahs as we get down to zero. Zero hits. There's silence. And then I'm on the beach, and the cycle begins." "They're showing you when," Judith said, after a long moment of silence. "Maybe it's just a dream," I suggested, trying to convince myself. "It doesn't feel like a dream," Eric admitted. "But maybe it's just symbolic." "So what are we supposed to do?" Eric asked. "I suggest we pay the bill and go home," Judith replied. "I need to pick up some things back at that house," said Eric. Judith shook her head. "You have a chance to leave, and you need to take it. I'm not saying that family isn't in trouble and deserves help, but we aren't going to be the ones to give it. I'll have Biddy send McGonagall down there." "They don't trust religious figures," Eric pointed out. "Neither do I," said Judith, But given the way this has all played out, I think we're all being given a chance to focus our attention on what actually matters. This is like a specifically designed trap to keep us distracted. Maybe it's just a distraction to you, but I know there's a reason I came down here. Edgar Locke was my uncle. One you didn't know anything about until you started looking into it, right? I argued. Did you even know you had an uncle? No. My mom never even mentioned having a brother, but would you bring him up if he was your brother? No, I conceded. But something is just off here. Everything in me wanted to turn around the second I started the drive down. We shouldn't be here. None of us. Eric shook his head. I can't just leave this unfinished. But what else can you possibly do? You've been here 2 weeks. You've documented all you can. They won't listen to your advice. The family, he began. Judith will call an exorcist. You've done your best. There's absolutely no reason for you to put yourself in any further danger. Eric slammed his palm against the table. I hear you, all right? I get it. I'm not just going to abandon the campus. Judith and I exchanged a look. There it is, she said quietly. Eric closed his eyes. I'm sorry. I'm exhausted. And you're not thinking clearly, I pressed. Please, listen to us. Besides, Judith added, if that reoccurring dream of yours holds even an ounce of accuracy, why would you want to waste another second on this demonic uncle of yours? Let him rot. We're going to need all the energy we can get to face what's coming. Hey. Startled, I looked over, expecting to see the waitress. It was Claire. What's wrong? I demanded. Everything is fine, but you just need to head home. What happened? Who is she talking to? Eric asked, looking thoroughly freaked out. Her guide, Judith said, moving so that I could get out of the booth. I reached into my jacket pocket for my wallet and took out money to put on the table. As I did, my cell phone began buzzing. I looked at Claire, panicked. It's fine, she insisted. Hello? I said, answering the phone. Hey, are you home already? No, what's going on? Huh, Max just called and said you were standing across the street. Why aren't you home? I nearly screeched. Chris explained he had to pick up a set of keys in Needham from a client and that he'd left Max in charge. I'm still in Connecticut, I told him, my voice shaking. How long will it take you to get home? I'll be there in 5 minutes. Okay, call me as soon as you get home. Go right inside. You told him to stay inside, right? Yeah, Joey saw you and went to open the door, but Kat stopped her. Jesus Christ, I whispered. I'm sorry, I'm leaving right now. I'll be home in 2 hours. What's happening at home? Asked Judith. The girl saw me standing across the street from the house. Shit, Eric muttered. Who the hell is that? Claire asked, moving back from the table. Oh, that's Eric. He worked with Biddy. He's fine. I've known him since... Not him. That guy. She pointed just to the right of Eric, who looked positively terrified watching me talk to what he only saw as thin air. I stared, and then a face came into focus. There was a man sitting beside Eric in the booth. Judith gasped. What? What the hell are you looking at? Eric yelled, causing a few diners to stare. I didn't know he was there, I said. How could you miss him? Claire demanded. I'm going back to the house to keep an eye on things. I think they're safe. Nothing can cross the protections you have in place. And she was gone, leaving us with Edgar Locke's ghost. I think you have an attachment, Judith told Eric. The ghost snarled. Eric shook his head. Not possible. I never take my medallion off. It's been blessed. He pulled a chain holding the St. Benedict's medal out from under his shirt. That may be, but he's here all the same. Who? Your uncle, I said, quietly sliding into the booth beside Judith. You need to go home. I'll call Biddy on the way. We need to get you out of this place. I can't bring something home to Noah. Then you'll stay at a hotel until it's sorted, Judith said matter-of-factly. Liz is right. This has been a distraction to get us away from home. She motioned to the waitress for the check. You go, she told me. I'll follow to make sure he makes it back safely. I need to pack up my equipment at the house, Eric argued. You have to get out of here while you still can, I insisted. knowing deep in my bones that it might already be too late. This has been Ghosts in the Burbs. Good night, sleep tight, and don't forget your nightlight. And be careful out there watching the eclipse. See you on the other side.